Welcome, welcome, everybody. Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Also, in this premises, we're allowed to use the first floor only. There's no reason to go upstairs anytime. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting on the step discussed tonight. So this evening, we are talking about step three, and I'm going to turn the meeting over to Graham.
Hey everyone, I'm Graham Rutherford, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Graham.
Welcome to the meeting, and we're going to be on step three tonight. We're going to start off, the book does a recap of step three, so we'll get into that, and really, David and I, a few months ago, well over the last year, really decided that we wanted to do some sort of step study. And just as important is that we actually wanted to apply these steps into our own lives on an ongoing basis, rather than this idea that the steps were something that I did a long time ago and I'm all right now, thank you very much. And so that was really what this came out of. And I always have to say this, you know, we're not experts on the book Alcoholics Anonymous. There's people here that know a lot more about it than we do. We're not really trying to impart knowledge of the book. What we're trying to do is share our experience, strength, and hope of taking these steps, applying these steps into our lives, and trying to get it across to people what it's like to be an alcoholic with alcoholism and the solution that's on offer for us all in here if we wish to do the work. So anyway, welcome everyone, and tonight we're going to start off on page 60, and we're just going to go down to that bottom bit after we've read through the steps. And this is really, this is held at meetings over and over again, and we're just going to start off with our description of the alcoholic, and we're going to read the ABCs. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. So this is really a recap of the whole first part of the book. And what happens in the book after this point really is the steps start to come fast and furious. They really start to just move through the steps in quick succession. Up until this point, Bill Wilson, Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, has been trying to make these three ideas clear to me. And, you know, as we've shared a lot in the last few weeks, this idea that I am an alcoholic, you know, what does that actually mean? Does it mean I'm an old guy living under a bridge with two coats on covered in urine? Maybe it does. I don't know. But what AA is telling me, and I was able to apply this to my own life, was what actually happens to me when I take a drink of alcohol. It's something different. This is an illness, and people who have it, what happens to me when I drink, so as someone who has alcoholism, is that I want more alcohol. I have a craving for alcohol that is beyond my control. So most of the time when I drank, once I started to drink, I wanted more drink. And I took more drink. It seemed like a good idea. I wasn't sitting there thinking, oh, I'm having a craving for more alcohol. I was like, yeah! You know, that's how it manifests in me. I'm roaring. And I want to get roaring drunk. So I didn't know that's what was going on. Non-alcoholic people, they can decide to get drunk or not get drunk. They can get off the express at any point once the first drink's been taken. I usually can't. I just want to get wasted. And this other idea that on my own I can't stay stopped. And behind all that is the fact that this isn't really about drinking at all. Of course it's about drinking or not drinking. But really what this is about is how I am and how I feel and behave and how I experience life stone cold sober. And that's really when alcoholism is its most painful for me. It's not when I'm drunk. When I'm drunk, I don't care. It's not when I'm in a blackout. Alcoholism is most painful for me when I'm sober. I can't stand it. And I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know what's wrong with me. And that leads me into, you know, this next part of trying to manage my life. And that's really what we're going to talk a lot about tonight in step three. Is how I never, ever, ever tire of trying to set the stage for my grand entrance. You know, here he comes. Yeah. It's absurd. But I continue to try to do it. Control everything and everyone. And then this idea that no human power can relieve my alcoholism. And I don't know about you guys, but I really think I tried it. I exhausted, you know, therapy, doctors, different countries, different relationships, not being in a relationship, you know, buying stuff, going to college, blah, blah, blah. Anything I can, getting a job, a good job, a bad job, a job. Just trying everything I can to feel okay with me. It just doesn't work. I get temporary relief. Let me tell you this, okay? I'm a guy that's moved a lot. If you move cities, let's say you move, and I've done this, I moved from Virginia Beach to Norfolk. I had like 2 weeks of relief. 2 weeks I was like, yeah, Ghent's cool, yeah. But let me tell you, if you really want some relief, move continent. Then you're going to get at least a month. You know? So, I don't know, that was my experience. I can't get away from this. And then the final idea that it's trying to sell me, God can and will relieve my alcoholism if I seek him. And, you know, that's just the kicker for me. And we talked a lot about that last week. As an atheist, agnostic, rebel without a clue, whatever I was, this idea, you know, that there is something called God. And that if I just seek through the steps, through participating in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I'm open-minded to some sort of spiritual connection, activity, action, then my alcoholism can be relieved. And that's what's happened. And it still works today like it did then.
Thanks. You don't say it too much anymore. I remember a few years ago we were down in North Carolina and Graham was talking at the podium and his opening remark was, you may not be able to tell, but I'm not from around these parts. And the room blew up. I love it. You should use that more.
Thanks, David.
My big geographic was from Arlington, Virginia to Norfolk, Virginia. I love this little piece, and it is heard at every meeting, and it's heard so often that I don't even listen to it anymore. But he does talk about our description of the alcoholic. It was pointed out to me that he's talking about the doctor's opinion, basically that I have this allergy, this physical allergy. Once I start drinking, a craving develops that will not be satisfied, has never been satisfied. And the idea that that's different, that that's abnormal, that 9 out of 10 people, that was a surprise to me because I really did believe that everyone was experiencing alcohol the same way. And I thought it odd when you ever try to get drunk with somebody who's not an alcoholic? They actually, it's frustrating. They get to this point where they get three or four in them and it becomes unpleasant to them. And they say things like, no, I'm good. No, thanks. I got a big day tomorrow. They put their hand over the glass when you're trying to empty the pitcher so you can get another one. Distinctly uncooperative in my book. And I'm here to tell you that I'll never know what that's like. I'll never know what that's like. I don't get a tipsy, out of control feeling when I drink. I get a dramatically powerful, in control feeling when I drink. I am the rightful heir to the kingdom of the throne of the world when I'm drunk. And I'm happy to tell you about that. And in fact, you know, we read the promises all to me, and that's what alcohol did for me when it worked. You know, I knew a new freedom and a new happiness. I did not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. I comprehended serenity, and I knew peace. I absolutely knew how my experience would benefit you, and I'm going to tell you about it, you know. So alcohol, I believe alcohol was a spiritual experience for me. It was a missing piece. It was treating my alcoholism. So I don't think that people who don't have this malady experience alcohol in that way. But it's enough to know that, for me, that I do. And so the description of the alcoholic, the doctor's opinion, the chapter of the agnostic, the third chapter on more about alcoholism. It's interesting to me that working with others finishes up on page 103. So we got about 103 pages that describes our program. And up until this point, 60 pages plus the appendix is all devoted to these simple ideas that I'm an alcoholic and I can't manage my own life. And that no human power, I'm exactly the same as Graham. I used to wonder, am I depressed because I drink so much or do I drink so much because I'm depressed? Well, I had a little consultation with myself and what we decided was that we better go to the therapist because we're not giving up the bar. So hopefully I actually went to the therapist and I hope that some hidden spring of my mind would finally unspring and everything would become clear to me. I would feel like a square peg in a square hole and be able to move about the world freely, just like I thought you guys were all doing. Everything would just be fine. And then maybe I wouldn't have to drink so much or weird stuff wouldn't happen when I drank. So the new girl didn't do it. The new job didn't do it. I love the clean. We talk about it all the time, but I'm the king of the clean slate, the fresh start. You know, it's going to be different this time. Whatever, the new town. When I moved to Norfolk, I came down. I'm going back to college. It's all going to be good. And it was good for about 150 days. I can do anything for 150 days. And then the wheels come off. So the human power doesn't do it. I can't do it. I'm my favorite human power. I'm my go-to guy. I'm the first person I consult when I have an issue. And that was the final straw. I am out of answers. I am absolutely out of answers. Everything that you guys told me was going to happen when I came here when I was 22 happened in the next 6 years. And I was able to come back at 28 and say, you know, you're right. I can't do the job. That's it. That was the simple thing that you guys told me. David, if you're an alcoholic, you got something that you can't solve. We can help you with that if you're willing to do a few simple things. No thanks. I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out. I should have that tattooed on my forehead. And then the other thing in here, the other pertinent idea that he's gone to many, 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 many pains to try to convince David of is that God could and would if he were sought. And we're at step three tonight where we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. And I thought for a long time that that said when I understood him, or if I understood him correctly, you know, or if I even believed. And it doesn't say that at all. It just says, am I willing to seek?
Okay. So we're just going to continue on from there on page 60. Right after point C is the paragraph, being convinced. And we're going to read the next two paragraphs. So being convinced, we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. So, you know, my experience of this, similar, I was just horrified at step three. My first sponsor, we sort of whizzed through one and two, and then he's like, okay, step three. And this idea of God, you know, and I'm somebody that completely rejected the idea of God. So went through my life from really my earliest memories of going to Sunday school and that, right up until 25 years old when I came into AA. My life a complete disaster, contemplating suicide on a daily basis. Should I jump in front of the train? Should I jump off a bridge? Should I drown myself? You know, whatever. Just always thinking about that. I'm so bad, and the things I've done are so bad that everyone would be better off if I was dead. That's where not believing in any sort of God led me. So it was clearly a big success. But still in AA thinking, well, if this is all about God, then I suppose I better get some books about God and start reading them, you know. And thank goodness that my first sponsor, Greg, was just very gentle about this whole thing. He knew that I was a militant atheist. And, you know, I've explained to you guys before, I'm somebody that after getting sober, you know, at 5 years sober was circling a church on Sunday morning trying to debate whether or not it was okay to go in there and see what those guys were all about. That's how angry I was at organized religion. So I was really bristling at the very, you know, the three-letter word. Don't say that around me, I'm going to get angry. So Greg was just very gentle. And he talked about a group of drunks. He talked about a good, orderly direction. And he talked about the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he talked about this decision really was about taking the rest of the steps, deciding to take the rest of the steps and being open to having an experience of a power greater than me through the steps. And so I could say, okay, I think I can try that. But it talks in here about self-will and me running my life on that. And as I've experienced that in my life, both before I came to AA and on a daily basis since I came to AA, it's this idea of me not really being qualified to do what it is I'm trying to do, but just doing it anyway. And the illustration it gives us in the book is you know, I know David is into amateur dramatics, and so let's imagine David invites me along to his group. So I go along there. I've never done anything like that before. And so all the people are there, and I maybe get a part in the chorus, and we've got the people doing the lights, there's a director, there's, you know, the dancers are there, everybody's all there, and it's the first rehearsal. And at the first rehearsal, I just really just stand up and say, whoa, wait a minute, wait a minute, this is nonsense, you're doing it all wrong. The director, just get out of here, go on, get out of here, you're no good. And then I just get down off the stage and sit in the director's chair and I'm like, okay, showtime. Right, this is how it's going to be, let's do it, baby, come on. And I start telling people how I think it should be. You know, and you can imagine what that production would be like. It would be probably rubbish. And how all the people would feel. They would be angry. Well, he just threw the director out. Who does this guy think he is? This foreign guy. What a weirdo. He just told the director to get out of here. You know, so you can imagine that the people who've been going there for years and years and years would probably be upset. And this is an analogy for how I run my life and how people in my family and people at work and the people I come across feel. And but I don't perceive that. I think I've got great ideas and people would just be better off. I'm doing this because this was the best way to do it. But that's not how they perceive it at all, apparently. And that might be by the time I was in my late teens, early 20s, I had absolutely no friends other than other crazy alcoholics and used to honestly walk around in my room on a Saturday night wondering, why don't I have any friends? And the only people that would put up with me were other crazy alcoholics who liked to get wasted like me. And I didn't for a moment think that was my fault, that I didn't have any true friendships. I thought, people just don't understand me. So they're starting to hint that the problem might not be that far away from where I'm sitting right now. And then I start to feel uncomfortable. Because I'm doing this with good intentions, don't you see? I've got great intentions. Everything will be fine if you do what I want. And on it goes. And I love this, these traits it talks about, you know, kind, considerate, patient, generous. And I can, when I want something from you, when I want something that you've got, or I want you to do something that I want, I can say absolutely anything to do that. And the needle on the conscience-o-meter is not even moving. It's going right through. Just whatever it takes. Lies, bring it on. Here's some lies. Flattery, here's some flattery. Whatever. Just let's get it done. And it's interesting to me because when that doesn't work, I usually switch to the opposite, which is, you better do it, goddammit. You know, I become mean and selfish and dishonest. So there you go. So that's my experience of that. And where that wound me up was curled up in a ball, again, on the floor, again, with a smashed up house, again, with yet another humiliation, again, crying like a big baby wishing I was dead, again. That's where that led me, and I did not even have a glimpse that it was anything to do with me that had brought me to that position over and over again. I was absolutely convinced that it was everybody else.
Yeah, I'm the same. The that opening sentence, the first requirement that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I look at that, I don't even understand what it means. And then he goes on to explain it a little bit. You know, that I'm always in collision with somebody or somebody else, though my motives are good. I always love that Bill gives me credit for my motives being good, because God knows my motives are sparkling, you know. I try to live by self-propulsion. I'm the actor trying to arrange I have to put myself in here as I read these words. I've always been possessed of the idea, like I wasn't a particularly gifted athlete or a student. I can't sit still long enough to pay attention. All these things. Somewhere along the way, I got the idea that I need to appear like I know what I'm doing, and that's good enough, you know. So you can't admit you're wrong. You can't admit that you're struggling. You can't do it. Your only answer is, oh yeah, sure, I know all about that. And this idea that the show, if it comes off correctly, if I arrange everything, then I'll be happy. Then I'll be happy. So I'm living in this whole life of chasing what I think is going to make me happy. You know? I failed out of college. I figured out that nobody was going to support my rock and roll lifestyle. You know, nobody was going to bankroll that. I figured out I had to write the checks myself. So you need a job. I don't mean to use profanity like that. But you know, so then I start, you know, so then I show up and do interviews. And so I show up as, well, and I'm in this process the whole time. He's asking me a question. What does he want to hear? What's the right answer? How shall I present this? You know? So I've got this whole elaborate computer flowchart to just answer a simple question, you know? I think it might rain. You know, why does he want to know? What am I, you know, so, but this whole idea that once this happens, once I get the degree, once I get this girl, once I get a child, once I own my own home, once I have this car, once, what, then I'll be happy. It's all about me and my satisfaction and my happiness. So I'm in collision with everybody. I do figure out that when I'm considerate, patient, generous, modest, and self-sacrificing, I tend to get more of the goodies that way. I figured that out along the way. So I started, David, he's a nice fella. He's a really nice fella. You know? And I've got a little 8-year-old who's one of the nicest fellows you'll ever want to meet until you get across purposes with him. As long as he's getting everything he wants, then he's cuddly and he's charming and he's sweet. And then you tell him no, and then his whole face changes, and he's hateful, and he's, you know, which is fine for an 8-year-old. It doesn't fit a 25-year-old, 26-year-old, 52-year-old man very well, you know. So I'm just this childish, self-obsessed, trying to get what I want, trying to be happy. How many people, you imagine, you go into a bar and ask, what do you want, man? I just want to be happy. I want you to be happy too. That's all I want. You know, I don't want to do anything. And I set up a whole unreasonable set of circumstances that have to be met so that I'll be happy. So I'm constantly in collision with other people. So if I put myself in there, then I can go back to that first sentence. The first requirement, David must be convinced that his life run on his will can hardly be a success. When I look at it in that light, I'm like, yeah. I get it, you know, and that has nothing to do with what it looked like when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, all of these things have been subtraction problems, not addition problems. You guys just said the simple idea to me, how's your way working, David? And I was beaten enough, and I was down enough, and I was hurting enough to just be able to honestly say, not very well, not very well at all. So, am I willing to go forward and try something new?
Okay, so we're going to go to page 61 now. And we're just really continuing on from where we were. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? Was it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? And there you go. This really sums it up. And I wish I could say this was just when I was drinking. But I can't say that. And I'll tell you what happens. So, you see, it's really starting to get down to it now. What's really wrong with me? You know, we've talked about drinking, talked about not drinking, and now we're really starting to get down to what is the fundamental flaw in me that drives all of this. And what it's starting to suggest is that the flaw in me that's causing all of this nightmare that is my life is my own selfishness. And that's just abhorrent to me. I hear that and I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm not selfish. I'm a nice guy. I really am nice. Look at this face. It's a nice face. This is the face of somebody that's nice. It's not the face of somebody that's selfish. But like it says, if I need some evidence, the people in AA were asking me to look at my life. and my life was a disaster. I destroyed the relationship with my parents. I remember when my mother had caught me stealing out her purse again, and she went to the bathroom, and silly woman, she forgot to take her purse to the bathroom, and she left it in the room with me, and I stole the money out of the purse and ran away, and I was away for 2 days, wasted. And I remember encircling the house for hours, dreading going in to face my mother, waiting until they all went to bed, and then turning the key silently and creeping in the house, and then the lights go on and she comes downstairs and I'm hiding behind the door in the dining room, and she pulls the door back and she's crying and she just says, "How could you do this again?" And I'm just like, I don't know what to say. And I'm just like, "F you," or whatever I said, you know. "It's your fault, it's not my fault." And that's where this all ends up. That's how the show goes with my mother when I'm doing this. And, you know, more recently, similar behavior, not perhaps quite as extreme, but with my wife as well, disappointing her, letting her down, her feeling like she's being betrayed, you know, because I'm running it again, I'm doing it again, I'm trying to get what I think I want. And this idea that people are not, life isn't treating me right, and so I'll try harder. By the time I got to 25, and this has happened to me several times in sobriety as well, only several, I don't know, but anyway, I just get to that point where I can't do this anymore. I just can't fight anymore. I can't exert myself more. And that seems to be the point of maximum pain, but there also seems to be some sort of change takes place then, and I'm able to go on after that, but it has to get pretty ugly for me to change. I don't do the changing. But yeah, so my whole life, the play doesn't suit me. These people suck. This country sucks. This job sucks. This boss sucks. This family sucks. This wife sucks. This house sucks. Everything sucks. And what's the basic trouble? I'm just like David said, I'm trying to get what I can out of the show. I love this victim of the delusion, you know? A victim of the delusion. The delusion, of course, is like a fantasy. You know, which I love. I love fantasies, don't you? Mm. Fantasies are so much better than real life. Real life, oh God, I'm already bored. It sounds boring. Real life. That sounds difficult. Let's just go over here to fantasy land. Come on. We live in a castle. We're rich. You know, let's spend all the money. Pay the mortgage next month. Yep. You know you've got the gift of the gab when you can talk your wife into paying the mortgage next month. But anyway, so the victim of the delusion that I can, you know, if I just manage these things fine, everything will be fine. And like it says, everybody else knows. That's the greatest revelation to me. And I still fall into that today. I really don't get that everybody else sees exactly what I'm doing. And other people look at me and they say, "That guy's really selfish." But see, other people are nicer than me and they won't tell me that to my face. They're not going to say, "You're really selfish." They'll just be like, "Oh, hi, Graham." And that's it. And they just sort of pull away and they withdraw. And I am the only one that doesn't get it. That I'm so wrapped up in me and how I feel and how my life is going. That I just miss it. I miss all these opportunities to do things and experience things and be friends with people and so on and so forth. Because I'm just isolated within me.
Yeah, and this idea of selfishness, as negative as a word as that is, you know, it's simpler because I mean on a very real level, not a deluded level, I really do have good motives. I really like being a friend, and I like having people around, and I like being a team member, and I enjoy your company, and there are, you know, all those things are true about me as well. This idea of being selfish, though, is to me is just that I view all my experiences, all my thoughts, go through this lens of me-ness. How is that going to be for me? Am I going to be comfortable in this situation? I don't even like to ride in other people's cars because I like to come and go as I please. If I feel like leaving, I want to leave. I'll meet you there, you know. You know, but it, But the, so the whole, I experience the whole world through this lens of me. So it's not natural for me to consider, what am I bringing to the table? What can I do for you? You know, why don't I bring some cookies to the meeting tonight? People would like that. Those kind of things don't come into my mind naturally. It takes practice, I've found. You know, I have to try. I have to be willing to change. So, you know, and an example, I was just thinking about the producer, even in his best moments, producer of confusion rather than harmony. Me, selfish me on me. What I want is I want to go for a motorcycle ride on Saturday. So now I got some options. I'm married, I have children, I participate in a family. I could show up in front of my wife and say, I'm thinking about going for a motorcycle ride on Saturday. I suppose a sane person would do something like that. What I do is I show up and say, hey, what do you want to do on Saturday? And then she tells me all the things she wants to do on Saturday, none of which are, I was hoping you'd go for a motorcycle. And now I've asked a simple question, I've got a real simple answer, but I'm irritated. And now I'm starting to think of all the shit she owes me. You know? This is what goes on in my head, you know? And then I'll say something smart. I might even accuse her of being inconsiderate and selfish. So, you know, it's a party living with me. And it's a small example, but it's an example of I'm bringing confusion to the game. I'm bringing confusion to my work. I'm bringing confusion to my home. I'm bringing, you know, hopefully not bringing confusion to the meeting, but it's all about what I want. How am I going to get it? And that's how I view the world naturally. That's my natural mode.
We're going to go to page 62. We're going to read the paragraph, Sort Our Troubles, on page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will-run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. And, you know, they're really giving it to me now. So, I come into AA, go to these meetings, talk to the guys in AA when they talk about drinking. It's exactly the same as what happens to me when I drink. It's very, very similar. That saves my bacon. And now I've got a sponsor and I'm going through the steps because I identified so strongly with people talking about drinking that I keep coming to the meetings and they're not drinking anymore and they seem happy. And now it's telling me that really I created this disaster that is my life. It was me that created it. And the whole time as I was creating it, I was blaming other people. But I didn't have to look that far. It was me. I did it all. And that's very difficult for me to really comprehend that. And so think about troubles. I have the same troubles as everybody else. That's another thing I found out when I came to AA. You know, I thought they were just me. It's just I'm the only one that's got money troubles like this. You know, I'm the only one that's incompetent. I'm the only one that loves the word spend and hates the word budget. And I found out that he's full of people like that. And but that doesn't make it any better in my life just because there's a whole bunch of other people. But at least there are other people that experience that. And, you know, relationship troubles. I'm not unique in that respect. Work, like David said, I'm work shy. I like working. It's repugnant. I don't think I should have to give up my time for that, for money. Just give me money. And, you know, it's not really a big deal. There's so much money in the world. Why can't I just have some of it? So anyway, extreme example of self-will run riot. I love this bit. He usually doesn't think so. I think I'm a nice guy. I had dinner with this Polish guy, Robert, one time in Scotland. I was his sponsor. We read this bit about selfishness. He got very angry. He got up, banged the table and stormed out and shouting, I'm not selfish, damn you, and ran out of the house. And, he came back, we made up, and he came back and he went through the steps. But the bottom line is, that's my reaction to this suggestion that I'm selfish and that the problem might rest with me. It really makes me angry. How dare you say I'm selfish? I'm not selfish. I'm nice. But then he goes on to say that it kills us. Because as we'll find out, especially when we get into step four, selfishness leads to drinking. And there's a direct connection there that I'm not entirely comfortable with. But that's what it suggests. And we'll talk about that more in step four. And then it goes on about God again. God, God, God. Moral and philosophical convictions galore. I am whatever you are. If you're a communist, I'm a communist. If you're a Republican, I'm a Republican. If you're a Christian, I'm a Christian. If you're a Buddhist, I love Buddha too. You know, I'm like a chameleon. I don't really believe in anything. All I believe in is me getting what I want. That's really all I believe in, and I'll do whatever I can to get it. So, you know, these moral and philosophical convictions, I would look at other people that claim to believe in these things, oh well, and I could never seem to live up to them. I can't be good. And I love this next bit. How many times did I go into meetings and people tell me, yeah, you just need to do better. Try better. Try and be better. Try not to do that. Try to do this. And I'm thinking, if I could do that, why the hell would I be sitting in a meeting with you? If I could just fix myself and sort myself out and be the way I always think I should be, then why on earth would I have to come to Alcoholics Anonymous? And indeed, why would I need to have God's help? I wouldn't need God's help. I would have fixed myself years ago, and I wouldn't be wasting time in here with you people. But the reality is, I need to have God's help. And one more thing, this idea of God. You know, when I'm coming to this, I believe in God now and I pray to God. I don't really know what God is. Like we said last week, some of the time I understand that I'm not God. That's about as far as it goes for me. I don't make claims for God. I don't really know. If you do, that's cool. I just don't do that. But at this point, when I'm coming here as an atheist, God for me is the simple actions of AA. And I know that sounds weird, but that's what it is. It has to be something tangible. It's going to meetings. It's not taking the first drink today. It's calling my sponsor. It's meeting my sponsor and working the steps. It's saying some simple prayers. That's what I'm talking about. So if I have that help, I'm confident that this can be possible. There's at least hope.
Just thinking about my sponsor. It's kind of popular in the rooms, I'm sure. But he says, you know, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. And so these troubles, I'm starting to get the idea that I'm the cause of the trouble. You know, that my self-propulsion, my self-will. I'm trying to extract everything out of the show. But this paragraph just glows at me. I mean, that above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. I mean, there's a fine statement of priority above everything. It doesn't say we found it helpful to be rid of this selfishness. It's desirable. So we must be rid of this selfishness, and if you're not convinced yet, we're going to throw another sentence in here. We must, or it kills us! Exclamation point. Have I got your attention, David? God makes that possible, period. And so, it tells me what the root of my trouble is. It tells me that it's the highest priority, that absolutely, I must get rid of this selfishness, and then it informs me that I can't do it. Now, I'm getting frustrated, you know, because part of my selfishness, part of my self-will is I'm willing to put some of my chips on the table here with you guys. You know, I'm willing to bring maybe even the majority of my chips or cards or whatever. But I'm holding on to a few, you know. One of them is I do whatever I want if I feel like doing it. Piss me off, I'm out of here. That's another card I hold on to. If it doesn't go my way, I'll split. So these are some of my moral and philosophical convictions. So I hate that it tells me this is the most important task to get rid of the selfishness, and then it tells me, but I can't do it. God is going to be the one to make that possible. Moral and philosophical convictions galore. I really do, and have experienced all my life the disconnect between what I intend to do and how I see myself and what's actually meeting the road, the rubber that's actually meeting the road. Because I really do intend to keep my promises. I really do intend to show up for that job, you know? I really do intend to keep my hands to myself and not raise my voice or hit you, you know? Those aren't things that I value. Those aren't things that are on a resume that I would write for myself. So I have these intentions of being loving, kind, decent, considerate, honest, dependable, reliable. All of those things are in me. I value them. I recognize them. I know what they are, but I can't pull it off. I can't pull it off. So you asked me for a ride. Hey, can you give me a ride to work tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock? Sure, buddy. I'd die for you, man. But the fact is, I take a couple of drinks, and I might not make that appointment. So I got to come to eventually, and the broken promises and the broken bones continue. So I can't wish it away. I can't reduce it by trying harder. All of those things. We had to have God's help. And again, I'm like Graham too. I mean, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but if you, I'm starting to feel like I'm getting painted into a corner here. It's like, now you must believe, you know. And you guys really did come to my rescue there. You guys told me that I could turn my will and my life over to the power of the group of Alcoholics Anonymous and join the rest of you in harmonious and brotherly action. And by the way, we're going to go ahead and do the rest of the steps so that we can get to 12, the promises of a spiritual experience. So you guys made the hoop nice and wide for me on the God thing. And over time, and a few trips through this thing, I do pray. And I do pray to God. And I do believe that there's something that's not me. And I don't even have the neurotic desire to explain it anymore. Even to myself. I just accept that he is, I ain't, and I turn to him. And we go together. That's good enough for me. Thanks.
Okay, page 62. I'm going to read this paragraph. It starts off, this is the how and why of it, on page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. So, the how of it is, I need to quit playing God. And the why? Because it doesn't work. So let's just very briefly recap. When I play God, that looks like me trying to get everything I can out of everybody, using people, lying, just doing whatever I can to get what I think I want. When I was drinking, it was booze and drugs. After that, you know, booze, drugs, maybe sex, you know, just whatever I can get. Things, you know, money, possessions, anything that I can get, status. And what's the result of behaving like that? I end up with no friends, thinking about killing myself. That's where that gets me personally. That's the result. That's the logical conclusion of that behavior. So that's why I need to stop doing that, because I don't want to. I can't stay in that perpetually. So God's going to be my director, and this simple idea. So me coming to the steps, the atheist, how do I translate this into things that I can actually understand? Well, to break this down for me, I'm going to do what the people in AA tell me to do. I'm going to do what they're showing me that they're doing. And what are they doing? They're doing the simple actions of AA. This is a program of action. It's not, for me, a program of believing necessarily. It's a simple program of action. And what it's based on, if you want a program that's based on belief, go over the road to the church. They have a program in there based on belief. And there's some beliefs and you subscribe to them and everything's fine. That doesn't seem to work for me. I don't know why. It just doesn't. So this isn't like that. This is a program based absolutely on simple actions. Belief doesn't really seem to be a huge component of it. So I physically go to meetings on a regular basis. I get a sponsor. I take the steps. I say some simple prayers. I call people in AA and tell them how I'm feeling. I try to be honest with other men in AA and tell them what's really going on, the secrets that I don't want anybody to know. And based on, I join a home group and participate in it. And what seems to happen when I do that is that I am in effect quitting playing God, because I'm starting to take some direction from out with my magical mind, where the whole problem lies, for the first time in my life.
Yeah, I love this. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. And for the longest time, I was like, yeah, God's the keystone. The keystone, God, it's God. I get it. God's the keystone. And it still, it continued to elude me. And what the words actually say are this simple idea, this concept was the keystone. And what's the concept? The concept that is I've made a decision. I've come through the ABCs. I accept through all the pain, the suffering, and the information that you guys gave me. I accept that I'm not qualified to drink like a gentleman. I'm not qualified to run my own life, and that human power is not going to do it. Something other than me is going to solve this problem, and I need to get into action in AA. And if there's going to be a hope for me, and I'm just not, yes, I'm in. I'll do. So I accept all of that, and then we decide that hereafter in this little drama, that God's going to be the boss. Huh. So he's the director, and I'm the agent. He's the principal, I'm the agent, he's the director, I'm the actor, I'm in the world to play the role that he assigns. So all my life, as we've already described, all my life, I've been moving around as the center of the universe. All of you guys are revolving around me. And as long as you're contributing to my life, keeping me jolly, then everything's fine. We can be friends, you know. But if we're at cross purposes, just like my 8-year-old, then there's a problem. But if I accept this simple concept that he's in charge, we're all around, suddenly I'm just rolling around here with my brothers and sisters. I'm right sized. God's at the center. We're all here to serve his purpose. Huh. And I know how I think, feel, believe, and act when I in my mind have God at the center of the purpose of the day, of the moment, you know, of the delivery of the mail. Must be God's will. Certified. So, but if I accept that stuff on the front end and just try to do these things, I change inside. My attitude changes. My attitude towards you changes. My attitude toward my purpose changes. A little bit. And it gives me the power to go forward with the rest of the steps.
Okay, the final paragraph we're going to read tonight is on page 63. We were now at step 3, it says. We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Now, the thing that really stands out to me about this is that I am so selfish that these steps become an intellectual exercise where I can do the steps and just continue to focus on the steps as a way to make me feel better. And that's the purpose of the steps. I'm going to take these steps and I'm going to feel better. I'm going to get a better job. I'll probably get a better relationship. I might get a bigger house. Lots of stuff's coming to me because I'm doing the steps and I'm good. And it misses the point. I miss the point and I continue to forget the point. These steps are not an end in themselves. The reason I'm doing this is, first of all, because I really, really, really don't want to drink again. And I don't want to go back to that nightmare that my life was. And I don't want to be dry, drunk, sober either. But the real reason I'm doing this is to get me in a condition where I'm able to be of real help to other people. And helping other people is what is going to keep me sober long term. Helping other people is what's going to transform my whole life. And this is the entrance fee. This is to set the table to allow me to be effective at doing that. And, you know, my sponsors in the past, they've set this prayer up with me. We sit and read the book and then they say, I want you to go and think about this for a couple of days. Are you ready? And then for me, this has been a very personal thing. You know, a prayer said alone in a personal time where it's me and whatever I believe God is, and to say this prayer and to think about what is it I'm really doing. Am I really ready to abandon myself utterly to Him, to take the rest of the steps and complete them the best I can? That's what I'm really signing up to do here.
Yeah, for a long time it was relieve me of the bondage of self so that I feel better. Take away my difficulties so that I'll feel much better. And I completely missed the part that victory over these difficulties would bear witness or be an example to those that I would help of your power, your love, and your way of life. May I do your will always. So what was also made clear to me with every sponsor I ever had was this isn't a one and done kind of a thing. This is a practice thing. My first sponsor had me write it down on a piece of paper, fold it up, put it in my back pocket, told me to take it out as many times during the day and read it as I could possibly do. You know, every time you remember it, pull it out and read it. And I did. And the sponsor that I work with today says that very thing. This is a practice thing just for today. So it's very hard to turn my whole will and my life over to the care of God for the rest of my life. Kind of like not drinking. You know, I can't imagine doing that for the rest of my life. But I can, maybe for this day, Father, take this day. Show me what you want me to see. And I'll go about trying to be your servant today. And that's enough in my experience.
So that says we're done?
We're done. All right. We have no dues or fees in Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're going to put them in the basket, just like usual. And thank...
Ooh. I'd like to sincerely thank you for this beautiful basket.
So it's made out of Tisket and Tasket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites us all. The Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Point out that literature is available on the coffee table. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise their hand? I'd like to thank all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are also invited and welcome at the meeting after the meeting. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Amen. Thank you all. Let's close.
Temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you.
Praise the Lord. It's a story.